We are going to be looking at a passage from John 15 this morning. Now, I chose this passage because I wanted to kind of tie in what we talked about last week with how important it is to know God and to have God say he knows us. I want to tie that into Thanksgiving. So this is not a passage that normally pops up at Thanksgiving, but I like to think outside the box, sometimes to my detriment, but we're going to see how this works. So we're going to be looking at John 15, verses 6 through 11, and we're starting with 11 because really Jesus explains at the end of this text why he just told him everything he told him. So I wanted to start with that. So we're going to start with the last verse of this text, and then we're going to jump back up to verse 6. Jesus says, "These things I have spoken to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full." Now, one of the things that is fascinating about Thanksgiving is the time of the year we've set aside to be thankful, which is kind of interesting that as a nation and as a people, we need a date to be reminded to be thankful. Especially when we're a nation that has more stuff than anybody in the universe. I mean, we've got just stuff everywhere. And in fact, sometimes we have so much stuff, we're not thankful because we have too much stuff. And we're unthankful because we've got so much stuff that everything is cluttered and complicated. I don't know how many of the ladies in here have ever walked in their closet and went, "I'm thankful I have more clothes than I ever would need, and I can't figure out which pair of shoes to wear." I know the husbands don't say thanks for that, but that is kind of the nature of how we are. We got so many things and so much stuff that a lot of times when we're thankful, we're thankful for stuff, we're thankful for material things, and that's kind of what Thanksgiving is about. I mean, it's kind of interesting. We have a holiday where we sit down and eat too much as a celebration of the fact that we have too much, which is kind of an interesting way to celebrate it. So in this text, Jesus is talking about things of a more spiritual nature, and we'll get to that in a few minutes, but this is what he says. He says, "These things that I've told you, so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full." Now, there's a couple of interesting nuances in that text. Number one, it seems to imply that our joy can't be full unless God's joy is in us. And I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. And it's something that I think is important for us to remember at the Thanksgiving season, that no matter how much stuff we have, no matter the abundance of things that we have, no matter how prosperous we are, no matter any of those things, our joy cannot be complete unless the joy of God is in us. Now, if any of you have ever read any of the New Testament where Peter or Paul or James or John or any of those guys are writing and they're talking about their lives, especially Paul, who gives very specific details about how much he's been mistreated in his life as a Christian. Certainly, we could go back to the early parts of Acts and see how Peter was treated and how John was treated. And yet, it seems to imply that those guys are incredibly joyful. And Paul talks about his joy frequently, and Peter talks about his joy frequently. Now, let me ask you a question. How is it that guys who didn't have anything, especially compared to the amount of stuff we have, how is it that guys that didn't have anything and were under constant threat of persecution were more joyful than we are? Now, how is that possible? How can people under threat of persecution who have nothing? And by the way, if you talk to missionaries who've been overseas, they'll tell you on a regular basis, people in other countries seem to be happier than us. They seem to be much happier. They're joyful, and you know I've joked 1,000 times that sometimes you just want to go out to the sign and say, "We're changing the name to Eeyore Church of Christ." Not much of a church, but it's all I have. Those of you who have never seen Winnie the Pooh clearly are not getting that analogy. Eeyore is the one who has the tail that's stapled on. This is not much of a tail, but it's all I have. When you have to explain it, it just loses something in translation. But maybe some of you need to brush up on poo. But that is the reality, is that we seem to be discontented. We seem to be unhappy. You know, we spend time worrying about things, and it's, I've got a lot, but I don't have enough. And yet we go back and we look at the apostles and we ask this question, how is it that Paul and Silas could sit chained to the floor of a prison and be happy enough to sing worship songs to the guy whose fault it was they were in there? Does that make sense to anybody? And the answer is probably, no, not really. I mean, think about this. Church people this morning all over the country are in church of their own choice and are probably not as joyful as Paul and Silas were chained to the floor of a prison. Why is that? Their salvation was real to them, and to us it's like, and we've got so many other things that are going through our minds, and we've got things that we're focused on and things we're worried about. And so here are these guys chained to the floor, and they're singing worship. By the way, late at night, probably keeping the other inmates up. But you know, it is a reality that when we look at these guys in Scripture and we see the way they were treated, they seem to be happier than we are. And so Jesus, in giving this explanation to the disciples that we're going to get into in a few minutes, he says, look, I'm telling you these things so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full. Now, I don't want anyone to raise their hand, because that would be, it would probably not be beneficial, but just want you to ask yourself this morning, on a scale of 1 to 100, 100 being like totally full, where is your joy meter today? Where's your joy meter today? On a scale of 1 to 100, you're just like, you know what? 0, I'm the most miserable person on earth. And 100, I'm just irritatingly happy. Where's your joy meter? And the reality is, for a lot of us, we would probably, well, I don't know, 50, 60. Well, you know, it's getting close to Christmas. We bump that thing up. By the way, isn't it interesting that at Christmas, while some people's joy meter goes up, others people's drop through the floor? Isn't that interesting how that works? Why aren't we full of joy today? And the question becomes, what does Jesus say? He goes, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full. And so maybe part of our problem is that the joy of God really isn't in us. Either we're not getting the right idea about how to receive it, or we're just not interested in it because we're so much more interested in the joy that this world brings. You know, if you went out and just surveyed people and said, what makes you really happy? Now, I can tell you from having lived it the last 2 days, if you go and ask my wife, what brings you joy? The babies are home. The babies are home. Oh, we are. No, not just Caleb. She's happy Sam's home too. That was that one. Was that Colin? Did you say that, Colin? Oh, Caleb said it. Oh, Caleb said it. Okay, so now your joy is no longer complete. But I saw Stephanie was like so excited. The babies are coming home tomorrow. And Sam and I have had this conversation. You know, mom cries when they leave. I cry when they come home. But I'm excited they're home. I'm excited to see them. You know, it's great. And so you guys get that. Your kids are off at college. They come home. You're like, oh, it's so good to see the kids again. I know Dad gets excited when the kids and grandkids come down for Christmas and we're all together. And, you know, my brother-in-law is really excited because his son from Illinois is coming in for the holidays. They're all excited. Everybody's excited to see family. That brings us joy. Some of you, it's like, oh, my joy is when I check my portfolio and I see that the market has been really good to me this week or this month. You're like, man, that really brings me joy when I look and I see how much I've accumulated. Some of you find joy and satisfaction in work. Some of you find it in family. Some of you find it, some people find it in sports. Bob Campbell, the most joyous Bob probably ever is besides church is a golf course. Is that true, Bob? But yeah. I can't golf with Bob. Bob's invited me a couple times. I can't golf with Bob because there's something about a dude. How old are you now, Bob? In the 70s. There's something about a guy in his 70s out driving me right down the middle of the fairway that ruins my joy. You know, it's like I've got 180 pounds on Bob, and it's like he hits the ball further than me, and it goes straight. And then when he smiles at you after he does it, you want to hit him with the club? You know, we all find joy in different places. And I think the joy and the thanks are kind of connected. We tend to be thankful for that which gives us joy, right? And so at Thanksgiving, and what is our thanks focused on? A lot of times our thanks is focused on family, all our families together for Thanksgiving. And look, we have this abundance of food, and I'm thankful for the food, and I'm thankful for the fellowship, and I'm thankful for all these things that have brought me joy. But how much time do we spend at Thanksgiving being thankful for what God brings in our life? Now, we're going to go back up to verse 6 now. This is the vine and the branches passage, and Jesus had spoke about that in verses 1 through 5, but we're going to pick up in verse 6. And in verse 6, Jesus said, if anyone does not abide in me, and this is kind of where we tie into last week's message. He says, anyone who does not abide in me, he is thrown away as a branch and dries up. And they gather those branches and they cast them into the fire and they are burned. But if you abide in me and my words abide in you, you ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Now, I want to look at this concept in verse 6. He says, if anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away as a branch and dries up, and they gather them and cast them into the fire and they're burned. You think about what Jesus is talking about here. He says, there is this connection. In verse 1, he had said, I am the vine, you guys are the branches. Everything is connected to that central vine. Now, again, if you're not familiar with grapevines, this analogy may be a little lost on you, but generally speaking, most of you probably know how a grapevine works. There's a central vine, it grows out of the ground, and then you have all these branches that stem from that vine. And any branch that is, anything that's not connected to the central vine is, it dies and it's unproductive. And so this idea this morning that everything that brings the joy of God into our life is connected to that central vine. Now, we like to connect a lot of other things to that vine. Prosperity, and I don't want to get into prosperity gospel this morning, but we tie a lot of stuff into that vine. But really, when you think about what the vine provides, it provides things of a spiritual nature. God says, I am the provider. And if you're not connected to me, you're going to be thrown away as a branch that dries up. And so that kind of ties into last week. But listen to verse 7. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Now we've talked about context a lot. What Jesus is talking about here is not secular physical stuff. He's not saying if you're a Christian, you ask me for a new house and I'm just going to get you one. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about spiritual things. Now let me give you an example of this. How many of you have ever committed a sin that you asked forgiveness for? Three of you. Wow. Clearly I'm preaching the wrong sermon this morning. Okay. I would hope that everyone in this room, not that you've committed sin, but everyone in this room has prayed for forgiveness for something, and we understand how forgiveness works. Now, here's the question. Why does forgiveness work for you? Why are you forgiven? Because you're what? Connected to the vine. Okay? People who were not connected to the vine, when they ask forgiveness, guess what? They don't get it. Now, some of you go, oh, well, Stuart, that seems harsh. That's what Jesus says. If you are connected to me, if you abide in me, anything you ask. Now, like I said, we tend to think of that as, oh, that's a, like look, that's like a rub the bottle and the genie comes out and we get three wishes. But that's not what this is. This is about spiritual stuff. Think about the power of that statement. Anything you ask forgiveness for will be forgiven if you're connected to the vine. Now, if you're wondering, well, how big a deal is that? Can you go to heaven if you're not forgiven? No. No. So this is a pretty simple concept, right? Our salvation, our ability to have confidence that we'll spend eternity with God is directly tied to the fact that he will give us anything we ask for. And it's like, well, what does that mean? That means any sin is covered by his blood because of his grace. As long as we are connected to the vine, as long as we abide in him. And that goes back to last week's message, I know you. Who departs from me? Those of you I don't know, but I know you. You know why I know you? Because you abide in me. You're connected to me. You're part of me through the vine. And because of that, you ask whatever. There are probably some of us in this room who have done some things in our past that we probably have more trouble forgiving than God does. I think a lot of us probably look back in our life and go, man, I messed that up so bad. I cannot forgive myself for what I did. But God doesn't have that problem. Because if you're connected to the vine, Jesus says, you ask whatever you want. You ask whatever you wish, it will be done for you. Now, why? Jesus explains it in verse 8. You know why? My Father is glorified by this. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit. And so prove to be my disciples. Now, I love this idea. How is Jesus glorified through your sin? That's an interesting question. How is Jesus glorified by your sin? Well, here, it seems weird when you say it. You're like, that doesn't make any sense. And again, this is why Paul says, should I go on sinning that grace may increase? No. But think about the idea here. You can go up to anybody you know, and some of you know some really rotten people, right? You know some people have done some bad things. Some of you probably know people who have done so many bad things that they think there's no reason for them to even come to church because they're beyond redemption. Any of you know anybody like that? You probably do. You probably know somebody that thinks they're beyond redemption. So how is God glorified? By the fact that he'll give you whatever you wish. You have the ability to stand before somebody and say, I've done stuff as bad as you, but I'm forgiven. And God's glorified in that. Why is God glorified in that? Because the amazing power of his redemption, the amazing power of his grace, the amazing power of his forgiveness is manifested in our ability to claim that forgiveness and share it with other people. You're not beyond redemption. You know how I know? Because I wasn't beyond redemption. I did some terrible things. I've done some bad things. I've made some terrible mistakes. I've got a good friend of mine, and I wish I got to see him more. He lives in Houston now. He used to preach at Greenville Church of Christ down the road. Carl Etchison. Carl does prison ministry now, which is funny because that's just never the... It's funny where God takes us sometimes, because if you had told me when me and Carl used to hang out 15, 20 years ago that Carl would be doing prison ministry, we would have both laughed at you. But Carl's doing prison ministry. Carl says, one of the hardest things to get the inmates to understand is that while the justice system and the families of the victims may not forgive them, God will. That God is able to forgive them. He said, and there's something amazing that happens in the eyes of a man who's been convicted of first degree murder, who's guilty. He said, there's something amazing that happens when that man realizes that despite the enormous consequence and weight of that sin, God will forgive him. He said, there's something amazing that happens. He said, but you know what? It's really hard to get that guy to understand. And we get it because we all have sin in our lives that we struggle with believing that God will forgive. And some of you are going, and my sin's not that bad. I've never killed anybody. By the way, if you have, don't tell me. I don't want to know. But that's the reality of how it works. And so how is God glorified? When we're able to stand before people and say, hey, look, you're no worse than I was. Your sins are no worse than mine. And God forgave me. I have the joy in my life that comes from forgiveness, and you can have that too. You're not beyond that redemption. He says, my Father is glorified by this, that you do what? You bear much fruit. And so prove to be my disciples. So I'm glorified when you produce fruit. How do you produce fruit? In how we live, in how we witness, in how we share. And so when we communicate God's forgiveness to people, and we are kind to those who are not kind to us, and we love those who were not particularly lovable, when we do those things, God says, I'm glorified by that. So when you ask me to give you patience when I'm dealing with this person, why wouldn't I do that? I'll give you the patience if you really want it. Because I'm glorified in that. And if you need time to witness this person, Lord, you've just provided me time, I'll give you the time. We'll figure it out. Why? Because I'm glorified when you're witnessing to this person. And when you need forgiveness, I'm going to give that to you. Why? Because I'm glorified when you can share with other people that you're forgiven. So he says, look, when you ask for things in the spiritual realm, when you ask for those things, I'm going to give them to you. Now, I may not give them to you the way you expect, but I'll give you what you need. I'll make that happen because I'm glorified in it. So in verse 9, he says, just as the Father has loved me, I've also loved you. Abide in my love. Now, this is the hard one, right? As the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. And so what does Jesus say? Abide. What does abide mean? Stay, dwell, live in my love. Now, what's the complication with abiding in God's love? Well, his words have to abide in you, okay? It's not just, oh, I love him in theory. There's application there. But here's the problem. When we abide in God's love, then what does that eliminate from our life? Now, think real careful about that. When we abide in God's love, Let's look at this from a relational standpoint. A number of you in here are married or have been married. When you got married, did anything have to change in your life? Some of you, now, if you're sitting there going, my life didn't change a bit, I'll be open for counseling this week. Just come by, at least not until Wednesday. I'm going to see family Wednesday, but Monday, Tuesday, I'm available. We'll be happy to talk. You're like, well, you know what? I've shared that, you know, before I got married, if I wanted to go to Waffle House at 2 a.m., I just went. I didn't tell nobody. I didn't ask nobody. After I got married, I did that one time and found out I wasn't supposed to do that. Stephanie woke up and I was gone. She's like, where's Stuart? You know? And we had a conversation about that the next day. And I realized I got to give up 2 a.m. Waffle House. Or take her with me. And then she said, but if you wake me up at 2 a.m. to ask me to go to Waffle House, I'm going to hurt you. Okay? You guys get it. Life as a married person is different than life of a single person. I would at least, at the very least, hope that you realize that, well, once I got married, I kind of had to cut out the other people that I was seeing. That had to change. Maybe the way I scheduled things changed. I couldn't hang out with the guys as much. Maybe I could still hang out with them, but not as much. I had my responsibilities changed. Things are different, right? When you enter into a committed relationship, your life generally changes some. So if you enter into a committed relationship with God and you abide in His love, that means that some of the things you used to be involved with, what has to happen? They got to go. Jesus is like, you can't be involved with me and that thing over there. Okay? Your love of other things has got to diminish, and your love of me has to increase. As that relationship develops, things change. Have any of you ever gotten angry about something and then ask yourself, ooh, where was Jesus when all that happened? Jesus stepped, we used to have a phrase, said the Lord just stepped right out of my body because he didn't want to be a part of what I was getting ready to do, getting ready to say. Have any of you ever lost your temper and then after it was over, you stopped for a minute and thought, well, I wonder what God just thought about that. I bet he is not particularly proud of me right now. That is probably not the way a person who abides in his love should act. And so the concept here is not that complicated, but the application is. He said, just as the Father has loved me, I love you. So what do I want you to do? I want you to dwell in that love. I want you to abide in it. I want it to be a permanent part of who you are. And that means it's going to change you. Verse 10, he clarifies. If you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love. Okay? Now, without getting into like 700 commandments, let's get to some of the simple ones. What are some of the basic fundamental commandments of being a Christian that you're supposed to adhere to? Well, let's go with some simple ones to start with. Love your neighbor as yourself. Forgive those who trespass against us. Is that one of them? So, love my neighbor. Forgive those who trespass against me. Be humble. Be kind. You know, the fruit of the Spirit. Be gentle. Be considerate. Okay? So, he says, if you keep these commandments, you'll abide in my love. Now, what is implied in that statement? If you don't, you won't. So if you don't love, if you don't forgive, if you don't show mercy and grace, he says, if you don't do those things, you don't abide in my love. Okay? So if you keep my commandments, you abide in my love. He says, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in His love. Well, what was the commandment that God gave Jesus that He kept? He's going to die for our sins. That's what I sent you there to do, man. This is your job. And I want you to treat people well. I want you to be an ambassador of me to these people. I want you to go live among them and be sinless and do the right things. And so Jesus says, I've done that. I've kept His commandments. I've abided in His love. So what do I expect from you? And so when you look at how this whole thing is kind of developed, we have this spiritual connection with God as we abide in Him, as we are connected to the vine. That provides us all these crazy benefits. Grace, mercy, forgiveness, redemption, justification, all these things that God provides us because we're connected to the vine. And so here's the question. Are you as grateful and thankful for those things as you are for your job? Are you as grateful and thankful to God for unlimited mercy and forgiveness as you are for your family, for your house, for your bank account, for a turkey? Now, that sounds funny when you say it out loud. Who in the world would be more thankful for a turkey than for grace and mercy and forgiveness? Well, if you go to most people's homes on Thanksgiving Day, you'd say the majority of people are. Right? Because, man, we will thank God for the food and the blessings, and we will thank God for the material stuff, and we will be so grateful. And you know, when we look at our lives and we're like, man, God's been so good to us. You know, just the privilege of living in a free country and having all the stuff we have, where we live in a country where you're considered poor, you would be considered wealthy in 98% of the world. At the same level that you're considered in poverty here, you'd be wealthy in most places in Asia and Africa. You'd be wealthy. South America, you'd be considered wealthy. And yet, as we're thankful for all those things, somewhere in the back of our mind, it's like, oh, forgiveness. Yeah, I got redemption and grace and mercy, and I probably should be more grateful for that. How many of you have ever taken something for granted? Any of you ever taken anything for granted? There is something. I'll tell you a funny story this morning. Come in the office this morning, sitting in the office, and I'm reading over my sermon, and I'm like, okay, I need to print it. And so I look at my computer, and it says, you've lost internet access. So Joey was over here, so I called Joey. I said, Joey, we don't have any internet in the house. And, of course, I was worried that, you know, well, if there's no internet, we can't live stream this. It's going to cause all these problems. I said, Joey, you want to let you know about that. And Joey says, well, it's working fine over here. So, well, the problem must be over here. So we're trying to figure out. Well, I said, you know what? I don't need internet this morning. I'll figure it out later. And so I go to print my sermon. Guess how my computer connects to the printer? Through the internet. And it says, printer not found. Now, I wish you could. Well, I am 54 years old. I lived in a time when you type stuff. I am not a techie per se. I'm sitting in the office, 54 years old, going, am I going to have to handwrite this thing? How am I supposed to print this thing with no internet? And then it occurred to me, oh, wait a minute. Stuart, you're old enough to remember chords. Not the musical chords, chord. So I looked, and sure enough, back of my printer, there's a cord. It's not been plugged in years because I have internet, plugged it in. It's amazing. It's amazing. A cord. Who knew? But we take that kind of stuff for granted, man. We pull our phone out and we pull stuff up because we're on the internet. We say, oh, look, we pull it up, and we don't worry about data. We just pull stuff up. And you walk in the house today, most of you will walk in the house today, and you will flip the light switch, totally expectant that what's going to happen. Light's going to come on. By the way, there is nothing more entertaining than watching people of a certain generation when the power goes out and their life completely comes to an end. And they're like, what did people do before electricity? They just went into a coma until the power came back on. That's what, yeah. There's so many things we take for granted. And yeah, it's funny because when Caleb and Sam leave for college, you know what happens in my house? It gets eerily quiet. It gets so quiet that Steph and I turn stuff on to make noise. So we have some noise. And because we've taken for granted the activity and the noise in the house, we've gotten used to it. If I ask you this morning, how many of you feel like you have lived in grace so long that you don't appreciate it anymore. You just don't even think about it. It's a part of your routine. A lot of you have a prayer that you say at night. It's for a lot of you, it's probably the same thing. You say the same thing every night. And one of the things you do is in that prayer, you'll throw in some line about forgiveness. Lord, forgive me my sins, blah, blah. And you'll just say it. And you say it just like that. Lord, forgive me my sins. You just throw it in there because we expect what? When I ask God to forgive me my sins, what's he going to do? He's going to do it. How often do you thank him for it? I mean, we thank him. Just to put some perspective here. We teach our kids to pray at every meal and thank him for what? Food. How many of you taught your kids to thank God for grace and forgiveness? Well, we taught them to thank him for food. Food's really important, Stuart. Every meal, thank him for the food. And by the way, if you grew up in a house like mine, if you put something in your mouth before the prayer, that was going to make you sick because it was not covered by the prayer. The prayer was not retroactive to what you'd already eaten. True story. Yeah, true story. Doug knows. Doug knows. He was in that house. And you get the look on your face. Put your spoon down. But you think about it. And again, this is not something I want you to answer out loud, but I just want you to think. When was the last time in a prayer you thanked God for forgiveness? We thank him for answered prayer. We thank him for food. We thank him for provision. We thank him for safety and travel. We thank him for all these physical things. But as people connected to the vine who receive all of these spiritual things like redemption and mercy and grace and forgiveness, because they're not physically tangible, like that turkey on the table. Yo, I see that turkey. I'm thankful for that turkey. And I see it because it's tangible. We tend to be more thankful for the tangible things. And a lot of times in our lives, what slips through the cracks is our thanks for the spiritual things that we get. And oh, we might mention them at communion, at the Lord's Supper, because, you know, we'll talk about Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. We talk about that. But is that it? Is that the only time during the week we're thankful for that? And if you ask most people that, they'd say, well, Stuart, I'm thankful for it all the time. How many of you like to know someone's thankful for something you did, but it doesn't matter to you if they tell you? Any of you ever like to be told thank you? And the answer to that question is yes, you do. You do like to be thanked. You know why you like to be thanked? Because it shows that the person you did something for is grateful. And we all like to think someone's grateful. Any of you ever held the door for somebody who didn't say thank you and you made a comment under your breath when they went in? Yeah, Bev's going to let them know. You're welcome. You're welcome. By the way, when you tell somebody you're welcome when they didn't say thank you, what you're really saying is you're not welcome at all. And if I could slam this door and hit you with it, I would. So let me ask you a question. We'll close with this morning. If you sent your child to die so somebody else could live, would you ever get tired of hearing them tell you thank you? If you sacrificed your family, your flesh and blood, if you allowed one of your children to die so that somebody else could live, could they ever thank you enough? And we all know the answer to that question. No. You can't thank them enough. You could never say thank you enough for somebody if they did that for you. And so this Thanksgiving, as we have this celebration of blessings that we are overly blessed with in this country as we gather together. And we're going to be thankful for those blessings, and we're going to be thankful for family. We're going to be thankful for all these things that are connected to this season. I would like to challenge you to take time in that day to be thankful for the spiritual things that you get from being connected to the vine. Because I want to tell you something, folks. Those blessings are more important than the ones we generally celebrate at Thanksgiving. They're more important than food. They're more important than family. They're more important than jobs and paychecks and bank accounts and stuff. I'm going to close with this morning. It's an old passage, all of you know it. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? That alone should tell you how important our spiritual blessings are and why we should never stop being grateful for them.